Thank you for coming. Let me do one thing that I think is a personal note to begin with, and that is to wish you Happy New Year, because this is the first time I've had the opportunity to meet some of you in this forum. Let me also apologize because I have a cold. I'm going to cough a lot, and I'm totally deaf. So if I misunderstand the question, it's not just because I'm slow. It's also because I probably didn't hear you. I'd like to run through about five issues, some a little bit at more length, and then I'm happy to take your questions, with apologies that in about a half an hour I have to run to a train. First, today in the NAC, we had a visit and a briefing by Jonas Støre, the Norwegian foreign minister, a briefing which I have to say was one of the most interesting that I have heard in my time in the NAC on the High North. Minister Støre briefed on this, and I'd like to highlight a number of points that he made, which I think are highly relevant and will be relevant in the context of a seminar which we'll be hosting, or which Iceland will be hosting soon, and I'll discuss that with you as well, because you may be interested in going along. In essence, my first SMS from Carmen telling me what I should be doing differently. Not from her. In essence, Minister Söder outlined that there are significant changes taking place in the High North, which have effects with regard to shipping, with regard to energy, and of course with regard to security. As he put it, the High North used to be frozen climatically and politically. Neither is increasingly the case. The ice is melting. Affected, and as he noted, more on the Russia-Canada side, but still on this side as well. The EU and US have updated their Arctic policies, and there are a significant number of legal and political fora addressing the changes that are taking place. He stressed, and there was agreement around the table, that it's called the High North, but it is still an area of low tension. There are no significant political tensions in the region resulting from the requirement for interpolar or circumpolar cooperation, that this circumpolar cooperation on many issues, from fisheries to energy to security, is still without tension. But this is a well-populated area. It can become an ocean without ice, the way he put it, if it keeps going in the direction that it is. There are extensive legal frameworks in place to resolve the necessary issues. He points out that if and when, and I think it's more of a question of when the Northwest Passage opens, it would have dramatic consequences, in particular for commercial shipping. For example, a tanker going from Yokohama to Rotterdam or in the other direction would have 40% of the trip cut from the transit time. This opens search and rescue issues very much for northern countries. It opens issues for fishery, oil and gas management. A lot of this takes place in the Arctic Council, which is an appropriate forum for policy issues, bringing together the five coastal states and three Nordic states as well. He pointed out that 22% of the undiscovered petroleum in the world may be in the Arctic. So you can understand the very important energy issues. They would be costly to develop in terms of research and development, in terms of extraction, in terms of transport. And, of course, there are security issues related to that. Now, in that context, high-level representatives of NATO and, of course, NATO governments will convene at a conference hosted by the Icelandic government in Reykjavik on the 28th and 29th of January to discuss the emerging challenges as global warming affects the Arctic region. Shrinking of the ice cap, technological advances are making the region's energy resources more accessible. New trans-Arctic shipping routes are opening and are expected to alter global transportation patterns. There are economic interests. Different stakeholders are, of course, engaged in addressing those interests, and there is an increasing military presence in the area as well. as it is a region of enduring strategic interest to NATO and allied security, there will be this seminar, Security Prospects in the High North. It will be opened by the Prime Minister of Iceland. The Secretary General will give a keynote speech. This is on Thursday, the 29th. The Icelandic Minister of Foreign Affairs will give an introductory remark. The first session will be on current strategic challenges. Participants will address the current strategic situation. What are the security challenges? Are we significantly prepared for them? Minister Stoner will speak. General John Craddock, the Supreme Allied Commander, will speak. And Professor Robert Hubert from the University of Calgary will also speak. Then they will look into the future, best and worst case scenarios in terms of security implications, new security challenges, including environmental disasters or terrorism. Baroness Taylor, the UK Minister for International Defence and Security, will speak. General Mattis, our Supreme Allied Commander Transformation. Dr. Henning Rieke, head of the European Foreign and Security Policy Program at the German Council on Foreign Relations. Final session, options for closer cooperation in the High North. Søren Gade, the Danish Defense Minister, will speak. Admiral de Paula, our chairman of the Military Committee, and Dr. Alison Bales, whom I'm sure many of you know, who headed up the CIPRI. She is now at the University of Iceland. And Jamie Shea will be moderating that panel. It is sure to be interesting. So that is the High North. Second, let me give you a very quick readout of the Secretary General's trip to Jordan and Israel, on which I had the privilege of accompanying him. In Jordan, there were, of course, two main subjects. One was NATO-Jordan cooperation. We are working on finalizing an individual cooperation program that will step up cooperation between NATO and Jordan in a number of areas. The Secretary General committed to the King and to the other Jordanian leaders that he would do what was in his power to speed up the process of agreeing this document, which I say, frankly, the Jordanian government would like to see move more quickly, so we will do that. They also discussed the regional security situation, and in particular the events in Gaza. I should say this from the opening. You have seen this in his public comments. NATO is not seeking, and the Secretary General conveyed this to all his interlocutors, NATO is not seeking a role in resolving the Gaza conflict. There are other parties who are heavily engaged in this. But, of course, he is interested. It is of global interest what is happening in that region. And the King of Jordan, when we were in Jordan, of course, wished to discuss it with him. And they exchanged views on the situation. The Secretary General conveyed his views, and that is, of course, that all parties should abide by the UN Security Council resolution, that a ceasefire should be put in place, that the necessary steps should be taken by all parties to allow for the success of the Egyptian brokered talks that are underway now. He then moved to Israel, where he met with the Prime Minister, with the Foreign Minister, with the Defense Minister, with the Chief of Defense. There were two, again, subjects of two topics of discussion. One was NATO-Israel cooperation. That is very well developed. Israel, of course, has an individual cooperation program. We work together on a number of very important areas, including the fight against terrorism, in terms of logistics, in terms of unmanned aerial vehicles and other kinds of technical cooperation. Of course, all of the Secretary General's interlocutors brought up the situation in Gaza, their assessment of where it was going. I, of course, cannot discuss their assessment of where it is going. The Secretary General repeated to them what I have just repeated to you. When discussing a possible NATO role, he has raised, of course, the position that he has made public many times, and that is not in the context of Gaza, but in the context of a comprehensive peace agreement, that he could envision a discussion within NATO and that he would see that discussion going positively were there a comprehensive agreement, were there a UN Security Council resolution, and if the parties were to request a role for the alliance. Next issue, Afghanistan. First, to tell you that the third stage of voter registration is now complete. That is in the East. It has gone, let us say, as well as expected and maybe even a little better in that it has gone largely without significant security incidents. So it has gone according to plan. What is better than expected is we have a higher level of voter registration than the Afghan government had expected. So it has gone very, very well. We will soon, and that means the Afghans first and foremost, but with NATO support, soon turn to voter registration in the south. This is where it's likely to be the most complicated, but we will see where it goes, and we are encouraged, I think, by what by the success of the process until now, which has been, as I say, according to plan in terms of timing and security, and better than expected in terms of voter registration. Second issue is civilian casualties. The issue of civilian casualties is one, of course, which NATO takes very, very seriously. We are aware that this is an issue that reducing to the minimum the civilian casualties caused by NATO operations in Afghanistan is not only a humanitarian imperative and a human imperative, but also essential to maintaining public support for the presence of international forces, which we consider to be essential for the future of Afghanistan, at least in the interim phase. So, as you know, we spend a lot of time, and first and foremost our military spends a lot of time trying to diminish these. Let me first, and I think it's important to do this, put this into the context that I think it requires. And that is, there's a lot of attention on the civilian casualties caused by NATO, and we also put a lot of attention on that, because that's our business. But I do think we need to put it in the larger context, and I would hope that the press would keep it in the larger context of how many are caused by the Taliban, or anti-government forces as Afghan government. I asked our military colleagues to provide me with data. How many do we cause? How many do they cause? And while I don't want to give out very precise figures because they don't want to be, they're not 100% sure of the fidelity of 4 versus 5 or 5 versus 6, I can tell you that for August, according to the data that NATO has put in place with a revised and improved reporting system, insurgents responsible for 6 times as many civilian casualties as ISAF. In September, 5 times. In October, 4 times. And in November, 20 times as many civilian casualties as NATO forces, ISAF forces. December data is still to be finalized. All this to say, let us, I hope, keep in mind that insurgents are responsible, according to our data, for 80% of the civilian casualties in Afghanistan, and with a critical difference, they do not pay any attention to the presence of civilians when conducting their attacks, or, and this is what we see, of course, on a regular basis, they deliberately try to drag civilians into the line of fire, precisely so that we have discussions like this. That being said, Commander ISAF, on the 30th of December, issued a tactical directive, which I will put up on the NATO website after this briefing, so you see it. Let me give you a few highlights. He has directed as follows, that we cannot take for granted public support, and that we have to strive to deepen and broaden it, that we, by which he means ISAF, must partner and conduct combined operations with ANSF, Afghan National Security Forces, to the maximum extent possible in support of Afghan objectives. ISAF independent operations must be the exception. He has directed, of course, as a basic principle, that respect for the Afghan people, their culture, their religion, and their customs is essential, and he has directed the following points. Unless there is a clear and identified danger emanating from a building, and to do otherwise would threaten our ANSF partners and ourselves, all searches and entries of Afghan homes, mosques, religious sites, or places of cultural significance will be led by the Afghan National Security Forces. All responses must be, of course, proportionate and the utmost of care should be taken to minimize damage. That's point one. Point two, all personnel will demonstrate respect for Afghans, Afghan culture, Afghan customs, and Islam in their actions and words. And that on the road and in vehicles, ISAF personnel will demonstrate respect and consideration for Afghan traffic and pedestrians. This relates to the concern that the Afghan people have had about NATO convoys moving too fast and in a dangerous way. Point three, in order to minimize death or injury of innocent civilians in escalation of force engagement, that generally means at checkpoints when people don't stop or when they're approaching NATO convoys and they don't stop. Commanders are to set conditions through the employment of techniques and procedures and, most importantly, training to minimize the need to resort to deadly force, including the use of signal signs, other warnings. They must be unambiguous and repeated to ensure the safety of innocent civilians. Of course, we must clearly apply and demonstrate proportionality, requisite restraint, and the utmost discrimination in our application of firepower. Important point, no one seeks or intends to constrain the inherent right of self-defense of every member of the ISAF force. That should be very, very clear. Any credible report of civilian casualties or civilian property damage will be immediately investigated in cooperation. All investigations will be in cooperation with our Afghan partners. The rest of the document, as I say, this will all be put up on the website today, but I wanted to read this out to you to make it clear how much effort NATO is making to address this situation. A few quick points, and then I'll be happy to take your questions. One, the Czech foreign minister will brief the NAC on the EU presidency on the 21st of January, so on the Czech priorities for their EU presidency. Also, and I have a little note on this, but I have to get it right. Thank you. On the 19th of January, the Croatian Deputy Prime Minister will meet in a bilateral meeting with the Secretary General to discuss the perspectives of Croatia's accession, NATO's role or their role in NATO operations, and with a particular interest in civil emergency planning. The Croatian Deputy Prime Minister is in charge of drafting the Croatian national strategies on the fight against terrorism, but also on civil emergency planning. So these are areas of interest to her. Two things I wanted to mention. The Secretary General's New Year's reception, also on the 19th. Let me invite you. We will have a spectacular menu and lots of free alcohol. I know that how that appeals to my colleagues in the press. But he will give out, he will read, or he will give a briefing on his priorities for the year, of course, for the 7 months that he will be Secretary General. But, of course, with the summit on the horizon, the new Obama presidency, I think he will have quite a lot to say. He will also be giving a speech on January 26th at the SGA, which will be, I think, here, but certainly will be here in Brussels. It's often at the Bibliothèque Solvay, might well be again, but we'll send you out a media advisory again. This will be on the 60th anniversary of NATO, and I think probably will not be in disagreement with what he says to you earlier at the press reception. I think that's all I wanted to mention, and I'm happy to take your questions.
Do you want me to identify myself?
Sorry?
Do you want me to identify myself?
That would be great.
Kari Huhta, Helsingin Sanomat. There's a fourth generation conference today at SHAPE on additional troops to Afghanistan during the elections. What sorts of pledges and promises have been made, and for what durations? And can you describe them in any detail?
I can. Just to put it, well, not too much, because when I left the building, the chairman of the military committee was just briefing the NAC that the meeting had basically just started and that they didn't have any results. But to put it in context for colleagues who don't follow this, there is indeed a fourth-generation conference taking place today in Mons at the Supreme Headquarters for Operations. The topic is, in essence, national contributions to augment ISAF during the Afghan elections to be held later this year. These would be a temporary contribution only for the election period. We do not, of course, discuss publicly what individual nations pledge. It is for them to discuss what individual nations pledge. The intent is for ISAF to provide third-line security, that is, backing up the Afghan National Police, first of all, and the Army in second line, and then NATO. This is an Afghan-led process. A security plan was signed off by the chairman of the Afghan Independent Election Commission, along with representatives from the Ministry of Interior, Ministry of Defense, and ISAF back in August. This is the first time that this will be truly an Afghan-led election process, and ISAF will support within means of capabilities. As I mentioned, we are already supporting the voter registration process. So that's the long answer. The short answer is there's no results yet. We wouldn't announce individual national contributions anyway.
The overall figure is that is being sought?
Yes, I do, but I'm not at liberty to discuss it. I'm sorry.
National News Service of Ukraine, Dmitry Shkurko. Declaration first. It's such a pleasure to see NATO normal functioning after 2 weeks of constant gas war. So that now the question is, does NATO see any security implications of this gas conflict between Russia and Ukraine? Because there was, in fact, publicly made some estimates that there could be some kind of the security sequences of these, including tensions maybe and even military involvement. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes, the gas is happily still on at NATO headquarters. There had been, of course, there's no doubt, informal discussions on the energy and in particular the gas issue between ambassadors, not least because a number of NATO countries have not had the heat they needed over the past couple of weeks. I could certainly envision a discussion within NATO's economics committee on the implications of this current crisis for NATO's overall approach to energy security. I would also not at all exclude the possibility of a discussion this afternoon in the Euro-Atlantic Partnership Council, which brings together all of the relevant countries, where, as I say, I would not be surprised if some of the countries that had suffered from this might wish to raise the issue in a forum including Russia and Ukraine.
Yes, two questions, James. First, you gave some figures about the number of casualties made by Taliban and NATO troops. Can you give the actual figures for those 5 months? And the second question is there already a procedure in place for the whole discussion about the succession of the Secretary General later this year?
Thank you. At present, I can't give the actual figures for internal security reasons that, to be very frank with you, I don't really understand. So I have gone back to find out why, and when I can, I will. So I apologize for that. I don't really get the sense of it either, but I'm being told by everybody that there's an issue. So I will go and look at it again. I only got them yesterday, so I haven't had a chance to overturn this little problem. There is no process launched, and I checked this yesterday, formal or informal, as far as I'm aware, in terms of the replacement of the Secretary General or the selection of a new Secretary General to succeed the current one after his term expires on the 31st of July. It is an informal process wherein, in essence, heads of state and government talk amongst themselves, select informally through their personal contacts who the individuals they consider to be the most appropriate, and then they talk to them. That is the way it has happened in the past. So there is no formal structure, no formal procedure. That being said, within the NATO context, it is the only process, informal as it is, that is not led by the Secretary General. This one is led by the Dean of the Council, the most senior member of the North Atlantic Council, Ambassador, because obviously the current Secretary General, this is one area where he wouldn't get engaged. Bottom line, it's the Dane, Per Poulsen Hansen, as he's the longest-serving member of the North Atlantic Council. Final point I would make here, until you would not expect even a serious informal process to begin, I think, until President-elect Obama becomes President Obama, because the United States will have its views on who would be NATO Secretary General.
Do you expect any decision
to be taken at the NATO summit, or is that not necessary? I certainly can't exclude it. And I know that a lot of, certainly, people in the public are talking about that as a milestone, but I can honestly tell you I haven't heard anybody in private conversations say that that's any kind of a deadline. That being said, July 31st is pretty soon, so I imagine this process has to begin relatively quickly. I have a personal interest, as you might imagine, in also knowing the answer to this question, but I don't have any more information than that. Nothing formally has happened. Sorry?
Right, James, I've got a few questions, so yeah. I'll ask them really quickly.
Please.
The Jordanian Trust Fund was inaugurated at the SecGen's visit this January. The website said it was founded in December of 2007. Did it do anything in the interim? The next one is ANA funding. The projected size of the Afghan National Security Forces, the budget way outstrips the entire Afghan Treasury budget. Who's going to pay for it and how? Not the first time I've asked that, but I'm hoping for more information. Is the agreement with Kazakhstan on transit moving? We seem to be getting the same message now for 8 months. Is there a hold-up? What is it? How many stages are there to Afghan electoral registration processes? We heard the second one was complete. Now the third one is complete. Where's that going? Is the NATO-Ukraine Commission discussing gas concretely? And the last one, you'll be pleased to hear, is the NRF going to be involved in the ISAF enforcements for election security?
Thank you. Jordanian Trust Fund, since it has been put in place, two things have happened. One is that experts, NATO experts, have provided or have worked with, let's put it this way, have worked with Jordanian experts in terms of establishing the essential administration inside Jordan and infrastructure. The second thing that has been done is an assessment of the mine problem itself, or the unexploded ordnance problem more broadly. So they have, in essence, done the scanning to know what's there. Now, the next phase will have to be the actual destruction of this unexploded ordnance, and what the Secretary General did was inaugurate, in essence, this next phase and view the equipment that has been provided, because that also has happened, the equipment that has been provided through this trust fund to the Jordanian experts, including vehicles, which we saw, including detection equipment in terms of destruction equipment. So two phases complete. Now they're moving to the one that really matters, which is the destruction. ANA funding. You are quite right that the financial cost of sustaining an enlarged Afghan National Army is significant. It's in the billions. And the Afghan government will not be able, for some time anyway, to sustain the funding for that. There are various streams of funding, some national, including the United States. There is an ANA trust fund within NATO, which has several million dollars in it. Sorry, it's million, not billions. It's 20 million. 20 million. 20 million a year, I think. Is that right? Two and three billion. Yeah, you're right. It's those are correct figures, but I'll get the final figures for you. Short version is we have a trust fund. It doesn't have nearly enough in it. One country, I won't name them because it is to them to name them, put 1.5 million euros into it today at the NAC. So it is getting there. The bottom line is we believe within NATO that this is a very important endeavor because in the end it's still cheaper to have the Afghans fight for themselves and provide their own security with financial support from us, the international community, than the bill for deploying our forces there. I might add that this is a case that the Afghans make as well. We can do it for less, much, much less, and of course in a politically much more sustainable way. So NATO believes that a lot more should come from NATO nations into funding the ANA, and we will continue to work it, but I would not say that we are fully satisfied yet with the levels within the ANA trust fund. In terms of transit, there are a number of discussions, sorry, to be more, not to talk code, in terms of concluding land transit agreements for non-lethal military goods, in essence, on either side of Russia to be able to transit into a northern line. All of these discussions are going, and I checked this yesterday, reasonably well, but they are complicated. In essence, I have nothing new to tell you. We are going back and forth with all of the three governments, the three principal governments with which we are working, that is the Kazakhs, the Uzbeks on that side, and the Ukrainians on this side. But there are complicated technical and legal issues. That's what, and financial issues. I am told by our logisticians that there are no deal breakers, but it's just slow, so they tell me. How many steps to voter registration for? This is the fourth and final stage. It's in the south. Will the nuke discuss gas? I believe there is an ambassadorial level meeting, including Ukrainians, tomorrow, somebody told me, on the way out the door. It is to be confirmed, and I have absolutely no doubt that it will be discussed. NRF, that is not the discussion that is taking place now at the Fourth Generation Conference in terms of using the NRF for voter registration support. What they are discussing now at the Fourth Generation Conference is national contributions, so not sending the NRF as a whole to Afghanistan. Could that discussion come up at a subsequent phase? I don't know, but that is not what has been asked for from nations today. Let's go here.
James, I was just wondering where things stand in terms of resuming informal contacts with the Russians. I thought that tomorrow had been a date which was at least penciled in.
My understanding is that it's the 26th. There will be an informal meeting of the NATO ambassadors, of course, led by the Secretary General, and the Russian ambassador on the 26th. But that is not an NRC. It's just an informal meeting of the ambassadors to have a first discussion of various issues and how they wish to see the NRC take off.
Does the gas dispute play into that at all? If this dispute continues, could that have an effect on that meeting?
I don't know, but I don't anticipate it. I think the meeting will be held as scheduled. Now, I'm going to take all your questions at once because I have to catch a train. So let's just take them all, and then I'll do them rapid fire. Sorry to do it like this.
Okay, quick question. Is there any concern within NATO right now about is there any concern that there might be some negative consequences for ISAF due to stemming from the fighting in Gaza? And, you know, the fact that the Western countries haven't really condemned Israel over it.
Okay, thanks.
The question is, has NATO been asked for any help from anybody, any country, to resolve the gas problem? I think of the pipelines and perhaps reserves.
Got it.
About the decision by defense ministers in Budapest to authorize ISAF to participate in drug interdiction, has that ever happened? Has that led to anything?
Thank you.
At which stage we are with the Kosovo Security Force, because some Kosovo media reports and speculated that the 21st NATO will start to training the Kosovo Security Force.
Got it. And?
Any latest on the situation on the border with Pakistan, with the NATO supplies being affected repeatedly?
Got it. And last one.
James, j'aimerais savoir, est-ce que le conflit gazier entre l'Ukraine et la Russie peut-il avoir un certain impact pour l'infrastructure militaire otanienne en Europe. Merci.
L'infrastructure. OK. OK. When it comes to Gaza, we have no information that there is any security threat or that that there is an increased security threat to NATO forces or NATO operations in Afghanistan as a result of the events in Gaza. We have seen the demonstrations, but certainly we have no information that this is posing a risk to our mission or our personnel. Has NATO been asked? Oh, the gas. The short answer is no. Nobody has raised NATO to help resolve the gas issue. I understand there is some discussion of the pipeline system. We have to be clear that is an oil and kerosene pipeline. It is not suited for this kind of situation. By the way, it ends in Central Europe. It basically still reflects the Iron Curtain. So it is not an appropriate response for this crisis. Drug interdiction. The legal issues related to the authority given by NATO political leaders for NATO to take action against drug facilities and facilitators who support the insurgency, those legal issues, as far as I am aware, are still being worked out. There is an intent to do it. But we want to ensure, and let me stress, the military wants to be absolutely clear, that whatever they do has a sufficient and appropriate legal basis within the national laws of our countries, and in particular, that this does not contravene in any way the use, or that does not contravene laws prohibiting the use of military force for law enforcement purposes. So our lawyers are looking very carefully at this. But some countries, that is not as much an issue. In some countries, it is an issue. So we want to ensure that the legal issues are resolved, and that is still going on. Kosovo Security Force, on the 20th of January, the KPC will be disbanded. On the 21st of January, the Kosovo Security Force will be stood up. Training for the civilian elements of the Kosovo Security Force will begin immediately. At a certain stage, and I think relatively soon, interviews for the military personnel will take place, according to the guidelines that have been set out, led by, of course, Kosovar authorities, but with a role for KFOR as well, to ensure that the KSF is, as we intend it to be, democratically controlled, multi-ethnic, and meeting the appropriate legal and other standards. NATO border with Pakistan, short answer is there is no strategic disruption to NATO supplies, not least thanks to the very significant efforts by the Pakistani Frontier Corps and others to ensure their security, which we have seen again. I might add that the assessment this morning from the military is that military-to-military cooperation between NATO, Afghanistan, and Pakistan has not diminished in any way as a result of recent events. Final one was on... Oh, no. No effect. No effect. Colleagues, I'm so sorry to run like this, but I'll miss my train.